You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
Hey, buddies, it's the Massive Report podcast, and it's brought to you by 180 Property Development. 180 Property Development creates uplifting environments that enrich community life in Columbus, Ohio. Their team of passionate design, planning, and construction professionals are dedicated to seeing projects from initial design concept through final completion. Have a property design or development need? Build something together with 180 Property Development. Learn more at 180propertydevelopment.com. That's the numbers 180propertydevelopment.com. We're back. It's a new season. Same Massive Report. We got a new location here, though, the Point Tavern on Riverside Drive, and it's treating us pretty well so far.
Absolutely.
Got myself here back with you, Bart Logan. Mike Krosky is back behind the mic. Mike, hey. How you doing?
I'm very good, man. Good to be back. It's been 6 months.
Yeah, it's been a while. We've also got Patrick Murphy, Smurf Alert, sir.
Hello.
Oh,
sorry, that was a little loud.
Yeah, I wish you guys could have seen Sam Fondy here, who's producing on the ones and twos. Smurf just yelled into that mic, and Sam shot back.
I was just Sam, a little too close.
It's good. Are you recovered? Can you say something, Sam?
I'm okay. Please just don't lick the mic. I mean, back off a little bit.
Seriously, Smurf, we're
disappointing.
We're trying to record a reputable podcast. Brian Phillips, our fearless leader, will return, but he is unable to be here this evening. And some of our other friends and extended Massive Report family, Alex Stanek, Ralph Schudel, not with us tonight, but will be joining later in the season. And you know, that might be all for the best, because we've got plenty to cover here with this small crew, beginning with just this little tiny news bit that the crew sort of buried Friday afternoon. You might have missed it. Will Trapp, the captain, center midfielder, Willie Franchise, is now Willie Franchise for Miami, Inter Miami, FC United, whatever, the Fighting Flamingos, David Beckham's. the new MLS expansion team. But Will Trapp traded away. First reactions, fellas.
I think initially the $100,000 seemed a little low, but I mean, given his contract status and who knows what kind of a market was really out there internally in MLS, it's not terrible, I suppose. But in the end, he just didn't seem like he particularly wanted to be here and playing for Porto. He was a professional about it, but I feel like it's one of those situations where it's best for both parties.
Yeah, I mean, from a crew perspective, I think this was a good move. Obviously, you would have liked to receive more in the way of money, but I think, as Mike said, Will's contract is up after this season, so Inter Miami knows that there's the possibility that they will lose the player. He's made it no secret that at some point he would like to play over in Europe. And so this would provide him with that opportunity to make a move, being out of contract. If Will wanted to move from the crew, he's only ever played soccer in the state of Ohio, including growing up in Gahanna and playing for Caleb Porter at Akron. If he wanted to move on and the rest of the league was aware of that, then they know they can get him at a little bit of a discounted price. That price can obviously go up to $300,000, depending if certain clauses are met, and if he does end up transferring away from Miami on a permanent deal, the crew will receive a percentage of that bid. So there is a little bit more that goes into that deal. They also get an international slot for this year, which could become useful down the road. But for a guy who did captain your team the last 3 years, was a homegrown player, the face of the franchise, arguably for most of the last 7 years. $300,000, the max that this deal could be, is still a little disappointing, I think. But
yeah, that's rough.
Yeah, it's not what you ideally would get. But we also have to keep in mind, Will's a player who, doesn't necessarily fit into every system. He's not your true, kind of wrecker of a defensive midfielder, in the mold of like a Danny O'Rourke back in the day. While he is a good distributor of the ball, he's not the creator in the sense of like a, you know, a Pirlo or somebody to use an international reference. He fit really well into what Greg Berhalter wanted to do, and he fit pretty well into what they did last year here with the Crew. So I'm going to be interested to see, you know, Miami paid a little bit for him, how he fits in there. Obviously, he's got plenty of MLS experience as a captain, as we mentioned. So, I think it'll be interesting to see how he's used there, given what they paid for him, and then what he does from here. I think it's only fair to kind of pay homage to Will, a guy who during the Save the Crew movement was, you know, about as publicly supportive as any of the players could be, wearing the captain's armband for whichever game that was with the Save the Crew stuff on it.
I mean, throughout the, you know, last run there throughout 2018, he was wearing that armband for the team. It wasn't just one game. He was wearing with all the supporters and Save the Crew on the inside. Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, it's certainly disappointing to see a guy like that, a guy who could have been, you know, potentially a lifer, but I think this is, as Mike said, the best for everybody. The Crew gets something out of Will, maybe not as much as you would have liked to see in terms of a return, and Will gets to go to Miami where he gets to kind of get a fresh lease on life, and maybe, you know, at a club that'll be a little bit more high profile, being an expansion club and being in Miami, maybe kind of market himself for, you know, that potential move to Europe or wherever, if that is what comes next.
So let me, you know, get, because I think there are a couple things. This is still a guy. This is the captain. This is a homegrown player, as you mentioned. This is a guy who is beloved by fans, and you know, they are trading him, and they did that more or less as a Friday afternoon news dump. I mean, I know you can't really control when they're, and there's not a good time to announce, hey fans, hey Columbus Crew fans, you know, Will Trout, the guy you know and love, the homegrown guy, you know, Willie franchise, he's gone for peanuts. But this was a pretty radical move. This was a guy who had been the heart and the engine of this team, down the spine of this team for, to your point, you know, 5 or so years. This is a guy who's a U.S. men's national team player who's worn the armband for them. You know, what I think maybe the assumption is that you're swapping in Darlington Nagy for, or Nagby for him, but this is, I mean, this is a really big, I think this caught a lot of Crew fans by surprise.
I think it's a surprise for if you're a casual Crew fan, but I think if you're somebody who's paid attention and kind of read between the lines a little bit, it's all not all that surprising. I mean, there was talk of him going to Vancouver that kind of fell apart. And I know in one of the scrimmages, I don't even think he played, right? From what I understand.
He played in both, but he didn't start.
He didn't start, right. So, you know, it's not, for people with their eyes open, it's not that, you know, it's not that out of left field. Disappointing for sure, especially from a sentimental standpoint. You know, and given all the stuff you talked about with being a homegrown player and all these kind of things, is kind of the hometown hero. But in the end, I think once people get over the initial shock, once you just look at it logically from all sides, it kind of makes sense in a lot of ways. And, you know, as Murph said, he's got a new lease on life. And I think it's really important for players to be able to expand their careers by getting out of their hometown, right? And he's not a young guy in soccer terms anymore. He's not old by any means. Nope. But, you know, it's not like he's a 20-year-old kid, you know? I mean, he's, what was he, 27?
He's 27.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, you're hitting towards the, you know, the tail end of the prime of your career. Maybe this is a perfect time for him to move on and, you know, get a new challenge and perhaps be able to, you know, make that move overseas that he wants so desperately.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I don't, as you said, Bart, like, I don't know if it's necessarily peanuts, but the Crew definitely lost money on this deal. You know, they could have, they could have moved him a few years ago.
Yeah.
You know, there was the, was it Birmingham?
Uh-huh.
That came in, and that deal, I believe, from my understanding, and people I'm sure
will
correct
me. Wasn't it Bristol?
One of the championship B teams. Yeah, in the English championship, you know, I believe Will turned that move down, not the club. I could be wrong about that, but
and that was in the midst of all the Save the Crew. Though,
well, no,
too, wasn't that?
Or no, was, that was before.
That was in 2017.
And then during the Save the Crew stuff, the 2018 season, there were offers, and from my understanding, Will wanted to kind of see this out. You know, he felt that he owed that to the club, the fans, and the city of Columbus, and you know, admirable from him because he could have made the move, but you know, as been reported, and you know, I can definitely confirm, Will wanted to leave. You know, he had served his time here, and I know that may hurt for fans to hear. I mean, I don't think it was anything personal with the club or the city. I think he was just ready for the next challenge, and you know, frankly, I think that's probably the best. You know, Mike, you can talk a little more tactically in terms of what we think Caleb Porter wants to do this year, but as I said earlier, he's not that ball winner in the midfield, and that's probably what they need in the center of the park right now. And not to say that they would be any worse to have Will Trapp here. In fact, I think the depth is a little bit depleted now. Mm-hmm. You've got two rookies in homegrown products, Aiden Morris and Sebastian Berhalter, now backing up Artur and Darlington Nagbe. And while both of those guys may have bright futures with the club, I'm not sure they signed either of them with the thought in mind that they would be the present. We saw what happened last year with injuries, so
right.
You know, you knock on wood that it doesn't get that bad again. But you know, this is an interesting time, an interesting move, and I can certainly understand why fans are disappointed. But as Will said, or as Tim Bezbachenko, I believe it was, said, you know, they left amicably. You could tell from Will's Instagram post that, you know, he still considers Columbus his home. The Crew will forever be an important club to him. You know, I think you're right if you want to say that everybody wishes they could have gotten more in terms of a return for him. But I think when a player wants to leave and you've already made moves, you mentioned Darlington Nagbe, to kind of see that through, you know, at some point you have to kind of take what you can get, or else. Not that Will would have caused a stink or it would have been any sort of locker room issue, but it's just, you know, you don't need players that don't want to be here for whatever reason. And I don't mean that in a negative way. You know, Will serve this club admirably. And, you know, I think that's the way, you know, hopefully people look at it. You know, it would have been great to get $1 million
sure.
in Gam, yeah. Tam, Am, whatever for him. But,
Garber bucks, you know, right, Bart?
Garber fun bucks.
And let's be honest, Will didn't have the greatest season last year. So if you're trying to negotiate, and say last year you were negotiating at $1 million price tag overseas, and that's just a number I'm using, and then, you know, now you're negotiating with MLS teams this year who are probably a little less, going to pay a little less, and know that he wants to make a move, you're going to accept less. Now, I still think they accepted probably a little too low, but we don't know where things were with Will and how badly he wanted out. So,
well, you know, also an underappreciated aspect of this is that the Crew free up $600,000 in salary cap.
Yeah.
That's nothing to sneeze at in MLS. So, yeah. I mean, you could sign a good player or two or even three in this league for that kind of money. So that's certainly not something to overlook either.
Well, yeah, and what I think in our Slack channel conversations leading up to this, I think it was Elliot McKinley pointed out, a lot of times when players get traded in MLS, teams hold on to some of that salary, whether that's reported or not, mm-hmm. and this it does not appear to be the case here. So, you know, that may be another thing. Hey, you take the full salary, maybe more than you want to pay for a guy like Will Trapp, and, you know, we'll take a little less back in return. And we're speculating here, but right. you make a valid point. That's a lot of cap space to free up, and, you know, that's you can definitely bring in somebody who can fit into that midfield, whether that's before the season starts or in the summer transfer window.
Yeah, because didn't Caleb Porter or Tim Bezbachenko said that they seem satisfied now with their group there at the center midfield position with Nagbe and Artur, but that's not very proven. It's a pretty big drop-off after those two when you're right. talking about Aiden Morris and Sebastian Berhalter, neither of whom has an MLS cap under their belt.
Yeah, I mean, I think If you really get desperate, you could throw in a guy, you know, like, I mean, Hector could be thrown into that role in a pinch.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, you can play Hector anywhere.
Right, yeah. I mean, he could play goalkeeper, I would have bet, even though he's a short guy. He's just one of those guys that he's a jack-of-all-trades, right? But, and then, you know, Chris Cadden, he can also play a little bit of that. He's played that in his career overseas. So
well, this is a pretty important, and this is a team that's talked about needing a spine, mm-hmm. and to have. I mean, yeah. I feel like that's a little bit worrisome to not have that proven. And we know with the injuries that this team has had dealt with in the last few years, you know, all it takes is one, and then suddenly, you know, we were able to swap Pedro Santos there into the 10 last year, but who's can an Aiden Morris, can a Hector Jimenez or Sebastian Berhalter fill in there long term if God forbid something happens to Nagby or to Artur?
Well, you know, it's one of those things that tactically there's just no real natural position for a guy like Trapp in this scheme that Porter's trying to run. I mean, we've seen in previous...
Talk a little bit about, like, the differences of how that fits in.
So, look, with Porter, everything prior to Trapp and being in Columbus, he likes a guy with some bite, you know. So, Diego Chara, you know, Mr. Yellow Card himself, right, and picking up fouls. David Guzman, that was why he was brought in. That did not work, right? But he likes that type of player. And Will Trapp is not that type of guy. It doesn't mean he's not an important and an integral player for other systems and other teams. But for what Porter's trying to do in that role, I just don't know it fits exactly what he wants. So, you know, Will's a good distributor of the ball, like Murph mentioned. But if you think of a guy like a Dax McCarty or a Diego Chara, somebody like that, that's the type of player I would foresee them trying to find, that type of player. Whether it's now or in the summer, I think we're going to see that before the end of the season.
I've got someone for you.
Who's that?
Tony Chani.
Oh, for God's sake. What's he doing these days?
I had to just look up. Somewhere? He is at least played 5 games for FC Edmonton last year.
Oh, is that in the Canadian Premier League?
I guess.
Okay.
I believe so.
The upstart Canadian Premier League.
I don't think we would do this podcast correct service if we didn't say that Alex Stanek would be outraged with the fact that we are not outraged by the Will Trapp move. And if you don't follow Alex on Twitter, he was very upset by this move and what the Crew received. So Alex, who is sick tonight and was ready to come on this podcast and express his feelings, I just want to let you know that he is representing that side of the Crew fandom for Massive Report. And I'm sure Alex will get to make his feelings felt when he's feeling better. But, you know, we were looking forward to a lot of debate tonight, and then it turns out that we're all kind of in agreement here. So blame Alex if you were expecting
more.
There
you go, Stanek.
So what I will say then is let's talk about what is one defining moment or memory for Will Trapp for each of you. And Sam, getting here on this one too.
Oh gosh, I will never ever forget his like, what was it, 40-yard screamer against
bomb.
Orlando.
Yeah.
The only reason I will always remember that is because I yelled shoot, right? Like I literally said shoot the ball, Will, like split second before he took that shot. So I'm going to head to that is going to be my memory because. I mean, somebody, I yelled, actually shoot to somebody, and they actually shot the ball and scored.
A beauty.
I mean, I'm going to retire on top.
You know, my favorite Will Trapp memory actually isn't even about Will Trapp. It's about his parents. So a number of, maybe 5 years ago, I lived in Portland, and I went to the Crew Timbers game in Portland, and his parents were I was flying from Portland back to Columbus to visit family. And they were on the same flight, and I went to the game a couple days before, and they were on that flight, and I talked to them very briefly. And I said, hey, you know, Will Trapp, he's a heck of a player. You know, he wasn't quite as established, obviously, at that point, because this was, I don't know, 14 or 15 maybe, something like that. And I said, hey, look out in 2018. He'll be on the World Cup team. Boy, was I wrong about that, because that didn't work out very well for the U.S.
Well, Will did his part.
He might. Had they made the World Cup, he might have been on the team.
Right. I mean, it was in my mind, it was a foregone conclusion that the U.S. would make the World Cup, but obviously that did not happen. But, you know, it's one of those cool things. Like, we all love to see the hometown hero thing, right? And, you know, for him to represent the club, go through the youth ranks, and then become captain of the club, and represent the club during the most tumultuous time, during Save the Crew. And even last year when, you know, maybe he wanted to move elsewhere, he was incredibly professional and incredibly devoted to the club. I mean, that says a lot about his character, in my opinion.
Hold on.
Oh, go ahead.
I'm going to say something since you brought it up and I totally forgot about this. I will miss Julia Trapp. Well, or whatever her married name is now. I will miss her singing the national anthem.
She didn't sing it last year, though.
I thought she did it like once.
I was talking to somebody about this the other day, and they looked it up, and I don't know where they looked it up, but they said she did not sing. So if that's wrong, blame someone else. But
I don't know, but I it was always a good omen when Julia sang the national anthem, so I will miss that.
My thing is not a specific memory, but just getting to know Will over these last 7 years, you know, covering the team. There couldn't be a better professional, you know, seeing him go from a kid who, you know, 2 years into college decided to become a professional soccer player and always handled it, you know, with class, with grace. You know, I don't think there was a time when I requested to talk to Will, or, you know, just even saying hello as he walked off the field, that he didn't oblige. You know, last year as the captain, obviously not a great season for the team, but was always available in the locker room after games, always had the right things to say. You know, he's, you know, on top of losing a good player, the crew and Columbus is just losing a great guy. And, you know, he made it clear, like I said earlier, that Columbus will forever be his hometown. And, you know, you believe him on that. But yeah, it's just, you know, if you ever got the chance to meet Will or get to know him, you know what I'm talking about. He's just top notch, and there's a lot of guys in MLS that are great, but Will is a step above even some of the best.
I think for me, I think the moment that encapsulates Will Trapp and his time at Columbus, you know, part of it obviously wearing the Save the Crew armband in that last stretch of that 2018 season, but I actually go back to I believe it was 2014, game against DC United, scoreless, you know, going in the 89th, 90th minute, and Will Trapp tracks back, steals the ball away from, I don't remember who it was attacking for DC United, you know, just outside the crew box, takes it up the right flank, and then just lobs an incredible diagonal ball over to Hector Jimenez,
yep,
who scores. And it was, everybody remembers the Wayne Rooney play from a couple of years ago, and this was the precursor, this was the original, and that was what seeing that is. It's frustrating because that also gave you the glimpse of the potential that I don't think Will Trapp ever quite met, or at least was never able to sustain at a level. And I think, you know, that I think the concussions, which we sort of touched on, you know, maybe that played a role in it. But I think if Will Trapp had been able to kind of meet that, and obviously you're not going to be going and playing a diagonal game winning, you know, ball every game. But I just feel like we saw this glimpse in like 2014 and in 2015. Then he goes and gets injured, and he just never seemed to quite take that next step that we always thought and hoped he would take. And I still think he's been, you know, strong MLS player, but he looked like, especially when he was coming up there in you know, 2013, 2014, he was going to be exceptional talent, and I just don't think we ever quite got there, and it was just so close, but not quite.
Yeah, I mean, perhaps. I mean, this is the time of his life where that generally soccer players hit their mm-hmm. prime, you know, where we should be in the midst of it.
Yeah, exactly.
So you might be right. But at the same time, maybe a change of scenery will bring it out. Oftentimes that's the case. And, you know, given the coaching change and the uncertainty of the club the last couple of years, maybe he's going to, now that he'll be able to be, he'll be free from that shackle and just be able to play perhaps and not have to be the captain and the guy. Maybe we'll see that. Who knows?
And that'll be interesting. And you know, if he does, and I certainly, you know, for him, I hope he does, and he's able to, you know, take that next step and produce. But that's going to make that price tag that they ended up trading him away for just stink even more, because this is a guy who's got loads and loads of potential, who's got, you know, such a great skill set that, yes, maybe doesn't quite fit in Caleb's system, but I think also if Will Trapp was producing at that level, you find a way, especially with a guy like Caleb Porter, who isn't quite as much like I need to be this strict, rigid system as Greg Berhalter. I think he finds a way for him. But, you know, with Will Trapp gone, obviously it looks like you've got Darlington Nagbe and Artur. You can put them down in permanent marker at those two midfield positions. But who fills in? Who takes that captain's armband for him now?
You know, that's been kind of ballied about over this last handful of days. You know, I've went back and forth. I think room could be, and I know goalkeepers generally aren't given that, but he kind of has that demeanor and commanding presence. Nagbe obviously has, you know, the trust of Porter. I think you could see a guy, you know, if you're talking about a new guy to the club, Vitor would be potentially good because he kind of has that demeanor of like a Liam Ridgewell, which Caleb Porter had him as his captain
and wore the armband for his Norwegian team.
Exactly, right. And he's an older player. He's 31. You know, you could see a guy like Mensah, who's been around with the team for a number of years. And while he's maybe not the most vocal guy, certainly a leader in a number of ways. So it's going to be interesting to see how that comes about. If I were betting money, I don't know. Nagbe was, if I'm betting money, I'd go with Nagbe. What are your thoughts, Murph?
Yeah, we have something on Mass Report right now that, you know, addressing this and just giving some potential options. I mean, you know, there are guys, like, to add to what Mike said, you know, guys like Hector Jimenez and Josh Williams, who I think would deserve and are certainly leaders on this team, but you need a captain more often than not who's going to be on the field, or at least somebody to wear the armband on the field. Obviously, Federico Higuain was the vice captain last year, but you know, maybe a Pedro Santos, a guy who's in the middle of the field.
Won't be this year.
Well, I mean, I just mean he's, you know, plays a midfield role, so he's, you know, around the referee, is able to speak to him. Jonathan Mensah. I would go with Mike. It would not surprise me at all if Caleb gives it to Darlington Nagbe, a guy he knows he can trust to get his ideas across, just because he's played in his system both at Akron and at Portland. I don't think that should be viewed as Caleb, you know, only trusting Portland guys or anything like that. I think that Darlington would make a fine captain anywhere, but you know, I could certainly see
that. But it will be
viewed
that way.
Oh, absolutely.
Because that's what people do.
That's why I felt the need to bring it up.
You're not wrong, Sam.
Yeah, I mean, let's be realistic here. What logic dictates or what common sense dictates and how people feel about
perception, you know, is
perception,
reality, right?
Yes. Yeah. I'm kind of with you guys, except that, like, I heard a lot of people say Jonathan, and I love Jonathan. Jonathan is a great guy on and off the field, but I don't think he is the kind of demonstrative guy that will that can take the charge of talking, of being the spokesperson to the ref.
Sure.
And I don't think I think he would shy away from that. Not because, I mean, his English is fine. His ability on the field is fine.
More,
I don't
more
think
than fine.
Case.
His English is fine.
Yeah,
great.
Yeah. And I think it's funny because a lot of the people that are saying Jonathan should be the captain were people that a year and a half ago were saying, get rid of him.
Right.
This guy is not what we need, and he is the weak link. I do think it's going to be one of three people, though. It's either going to be Nagbe, like you guys said, because it is somebody that Caleb trusts and has had him before and knows how to run the thing and be a spokesperson, be that spokesperson with the ref. It's going to be either him. It's going to be Zardes as a leader. As in the goal scorer, and as a guy who's not like hot headed, but has a fairly calm demeanor, even if he does have to go to the ref. Or it could very much be Pedro Santos, and that's going to be like really interesting because he kind of almost took that,
sure,
to a certain degree, to kind of took that lead last year in replacement of Higuain. Now he wasn't the captain,
right?
But I think he showed that he will, you know, run through walls of people for this team, and I think that's. that's like part of the evolution of Pedro that maybe we weren't expecting, but we are now seeing, which, give Caleb credit, he's given him freedom to do things that maybe Greg wasn't giving him to do, and he's running away with it and taking the responsibility. So one of those three.
I think one quick comment about Pedro Santos, which is something that I think it is, this season is going to be so interesting with Pedro Santos, because again, once he's at that wing position, I don't know that he's going to be nearly as productive as he was. And I think Crew fans are going to be in for when you talk about the goals and the assists. I think the factor there that really changed more than anything, because it's not like he finally got, you know, MLS here after a season and a half. Yes, he got more freedom, but he was also in the center of the park for the first time in his MLS career, and the play was running for him instead of being on the outside and having to create from in there, lob balls across, cut in. He had the ball in the dangerous areas. Sam, quick in on that.
Yeah, I'm going to have to disagree on there. And only because I think hopefully what you want is what is a repeat of 2015 season, which you have your two wingers being able to score. And just because they're not scoring from, like, you now have two. It seems that Pedro, including this offseason, seems to have figured out how to dial his ball down so he's not skying it every time. And that's good. But his scoring is starting to become more consistent instead of once every 20 games.
But so that's because he was playing 20.
I think it was like
midfield.
35 games.
He also, just real quick, before he switched on May 25th when Higuain got hurt, he had two goals and two assists on the season already. So you got some production, you know. That was better production in, you know, 10 matches or whatever that was than you were getting out of him before. So you did start to see some of that on the left wing.
So now imagine him playing opposite of Diaz, who can score and has speed on the other side. And then all of a sudden you're back to having something that's somewhat similar to Miram and Finley in 2015, where both of those guys and a very good scorer in the front are able to stretch that defense out, because now the defense can't just sit in the box and just hug Zardes.
You know, the biggest part here is, and this is something Porter mentioned all of last year, is for this system to be successful, wingers have to make an impact and score and provide assists and things like that. I think now Santos doesn't have to be that guide where to shoulder the burden, him and Zardes. There's so many other guys that can legitimately make an impact that he can play a little more free, and he can cut in and make the and hit those shots, right? So I hear what you're saying, Bart. I don't know that given this lineup that we see now, theoretically, I think we're going to see a similar Santos than we did that. Because as efficient as he was, oddly, at that 10 role when Higuain went down, he always seemed a little uncomfortable.
It'll be interesting, and we will get into this, I think, a little bit more in depth in one of, you know, the next editions as we get in our preseason picks. I do want to, you know, quick, the other point I wanted to make, and the person that I don't think has been bandied about, and you know, maybe there's something that I'm missing here, for the captain position, but one I would like to nominate would be King Arison Afful. And I think one of those reasons is because, you know, he's an experienced player. He is, as long as he is in that, you know, as he's healthy, he is in your starting 11. He's not a guy who's afraid to, you know, and maybe to his detriment sometimes, but has never been, you know, shy about having a word in with the referee. And he's a guy, obviously, that the players, his teammates, all respect as a leader. Right. But he's also a guy who, you know, can't callously maybe a little bit. He probably doesn't have the, you know, they just renewed his contract this year, but he's only got, you know, maybe one more year left in him, and is at 33 years old, doesn't have a lot more seasons in MLS or soccer, I don't think, really. So he could be a guy that I think Caleb Porter would feel comfortable putting that captain's armband on, and then there's a chance for somebody who, you know, we'd all been. There hadn't been any need to do any succession planning for who's going to lead this team, because Will Trapp was going to be, you know, the career captain for, you know, for our Alex Stanics out there. But But that's not the case now. And I don't know if, and maybe that player is there that can kind of wear that armband, you know, and be Captain Columbus long term. But I think you could do a lot worse than giving it to Harrison Offal for this season, maybe the next season, and seeing if that other person emerges in the locker room. Maybe it's someone who's there already. Maybe it's somebody who comes in, you know, maybe it's one of these young guys.
I think
who could be the long-term captain.
Just looking at past experience from Caleb Porter, if you look at every captain he's had, they've all been down the spine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he had Valeri, he had Will Johnson, he had Liam Ridgewell. Mm-hmm. All those guys are spine players. He took the captain's band from Jack Jewsbury and put it on Will Johnson, right? I think that's what you're going to see. That's why I would put a lot of money on Nagbe.
It'll certainly be interesting, and we'll still have some time getting there. So we talked about the armband. Now we've got to talk about this other just little bit of crew news that came out last week that got a little bit of attention. not armbands. I'm talking about rebrands. That's right.
Nice segue.
Right?
That's great.
That's what they pay me the big bucks
what a
for.
Pro.
I will double your salary.
Two zeros
two,
this time,
yeah,
Mark.
Two times zero, still zero. The rebrand, the announcement, I believe, what was this, Wednesday or Thursday of last week, a Michael A. Race column comes out reporting that the crew are, you know, considering changing, you know, rebranding. At the time, it seemed like that morning that colors, name, logo, everything was on the table. By the end of the day, the crew would walk back both the colors and the name, so now it just seems like the logo is what's up for consideration. I said at the beginning of the morning, I believe that this was a trial balloon. And I think we could have just looked at the Haslam's last experience with rebranding and known that, you know, some of those crew fans who were getting really, really agitated could kind of take a deep breath because they just changed the Browns logo to shades of orange and made the face mask brown instead of gray. And I don't think, you know, anybody was going to lose too much sleep if the SC fell off the crew logo and then,
nope.
You know, maybe the checkers were reversed. But but it was interesting. What are your reactions to, you know, the rebrand discussion? And Murph, I know you were, you know, kind of plugged in covering this as the news broke. And you know, was this – did the crew's position evolve throughout the day? Or was, you know, A-Race maybe a little bit early on the reporting or, you know, jumped the gun a bit?
First of all, I want to thank Mike for – making 17,000 people text me before I even woke up that morning. So then I had to get up and read his column and figure out what the hell was going on. So thanks, Mike. I think there certainly was a point in time, from my understanding, where this was a thought. You know, new ownership came in, and we're looking at all possibilities. You know, they obviously, you know, they didn't just buy the crew to you know, have a soccer team. They want to make money off of this thing, and if we're just being honest. And one of the ways to do that are rebrands and new stadiums and things like that. So it's not surprising that this was considered at some point in time. You know, I don't know where Mike got his information or kind of when it came to him, but I don't think he was wrong. I think this was certainly a discussion at some point in time. I also know, because I talked to him, that there is a Pete Edwards also involved in this ownership group, and he's a guy who has been there from the beginning, understands the importance of the colors and the team name just as much as anyone sitting at this table or anyone listening to this podcast. And when I talked to Pete, he made it very clear that the colors weren't changing, that the name, you know, wasn't going to change in any sort of significant way, as you mentioned. You know, maybe they drop the SC. Maybe they make some small tweak. This is just me speculating. And the one other thing is that you know, the original logo isn't the same logo anymore. Could I see them maybe doing an updated version of that or changing it to something else? You know, I think
bring back the hard hat.
I think a lot of
yes,
people.
Yes, please. That would be awesome.
I think a lot of people like the new logo, myself included, but I think given what happened under that ownership group, I don't think there are very many people that are overly attached to it and would be super sad to see it go. So, you know, it would not surprise me at all, from my understanding, if this ownership group does make some changes, but they're not going to be as drastic as maybe the article from Mike intimated. And again, I don't think Mike was wrong. I think he had factual information in there. I just think that you know, if there were still those thoughts within the ownership mind, I think it became clear very quickly that they did not want to go that far with any sort of changes, I guess is what I'll say.
Let's just be clear. This is Dispatch Mike, not Massive Report Mike, that made this.
Correct.
But yeah, when I saw it, my initial thought was, why? Why even? I understand maybe you can, you know, the Haslams don't have the history that we do, right? Being with the club since early on, if not from the very beginning. So the black and yellow means a lot to us, and even the original logo, right? And it was one of those things like, hey, we saved the Columbus Crew, not the Columbus soccer team. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, let's not change the name. Let's not change the colors, right? So I'm glad. I appreciate to an extent where maybe they had that thought last year. Like, hey, what do you guys think about a rebrand? And then it's kind of like, nope, let's not do that, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm with Murph here in the sense that, hey, if they got rid of the SC or maybe tweaked the logo a little bit, be fine. But don't change the colors. Don't change the name. We're the Columbus Crew for a reason. That's who we're supporting. We support the black and yellow or black and gold, as some people like to say. But it was interesting because in the span of, what, 48 hours, it went from, hey, we're going to change the logo, and then Will Trapp's gone. This was not a good PR situation for Columbus Crew.
I will argue a little bit on the rebrand side. I think that was fine because really when I look at it, it's one, you got people talk. I mean, this was the thing that was trending. You know, everyone saw that. It got everybody talking. And again, from a trial balloon standpoint, all a trial balloon is, hey, I'm gonna throw something out there and see what happens. You know, it's a good way to do a focus group without having to pay thousands of dollars to a Frank Luntz type person. And you know, if you're the crew ownership, it's a good way to do it. And if you're Mike A-Race and maybe you've heard something about it and, you know, that they're thinking about it, and maybe you know that that's not going to go over well, maybe you do break that and just show the ownership and team leadership that this is not something that people are for. But it got everybody talking about it. It got everybody excited. And more importantly, it showed that they have a reactive and responsive ownership who immediately got in there. I mean, when we're talking about, you know, news cycles, to get in there within, if for a 24-hour or 48-hour news cycle, for you to get this is something, and then get, you know, by the end of it, you've got the president of the team saying, no, that's not the case. I mean, that's a big evolution, big story, and they got all of that immediately. Imagine if this was a pre-court, you know, floating this. Never heard anything back. They wouldn't have taken any of that feedback from fans. They wouldn't have made sure to go out and reassure fans whether or not they were seriously considering it when the story was floated, that it wasn't something that they were going to do. It showed that they listened and they were immediate in reacting. And I think those are both really good signs coming from a fan standpoint when I'm looking at, you know, my billionaire owners that don't need to be this involved and need to be that invested.
Sure, absolutely. And I mean, some people buy into the all press is good press, right? And perhaps prior to the season starting. And it also did kind of tamp down the Will Trapp news as well, because a lot of people are focused on that rather than Will Trapp. But overall, I'm glad to see that that's not the case. And if they do make some minor tweaks, I think overall fans will be happy about that rather than some over-the-top rebrand. But I'm glad to see, as you said, Bart, that they are responsive and they're going to kind of take fans' feedback.
Well, and let's just be clear, you know, Mike Arias, not you.
Not me.
Has been doing this for a long time, mm-hmm. and he wasn't going to publish a story in the Columbus Dispatch that didn't have something behind
it. Oh,
him.
Yeah.
You know, there was, you know, clearly he sourced that, and, you know, just because the team now says that you know, that's not going to happen doesn't mean it wasn't. So
precisely.
I don't want to discredit anything Mike said, because clearly he, you know, he had something there and whatnot. But yes, I agree with both of you, and probably Sam too, even though he's been very quiet on the topic, that, you know, whether it was a trial balloon, whether, you know, whatever it was, I think that, you know, this team has been through too much. These fans have been through too much to drastically make changes like that. And I think if it wasn't clear to them before, they now know that, you know, you want to carry the black and gold, the crew color, the crew name, into this new stadium. You know, it's something now that not only the city of Columbus can identify with, but I think a lot of sports people now recognize, hey, you know, these people saved the crew, you know, and that's not just a soccer thing either. I think that's something that resonates a bit more, especially in any city that's had their team taken away from them. I think, you know, that is a big thing that is important in the sports world in general.
Ultimately, it feels like, I'm not going to say tone deafness. I'm going to say it's just a misstep.
Sure.
On behalf of not just the front office or ownership, but maybe on behalf of whoever made the statement to Mike Ares about whether that was happening or not. And look, I trust Dr. Pete. I know, look, some fans are going to say, hey, we were told to trust the system before and look what happened. And you know what? You're right. You are very right. I'm not going to tell you to trust the system. But I am going to say trust a guy who has been around the team for 25 years.
Yeah, he's one of your
at
own.
At least, yeah, he's, you know, this is a guy that is one of your own. So that's something, you know, I didn't freak out about it, but I was just like, yeah, why would you do that? I don't remember who said it, but somebody said it on Twitter, I believe, is it's really hard for other leagues to take MLS seriously when it keeps changing things every few years, whether it's us or whether it's other teams or whether it's this or whether it's that. This is how you build a legacy and a history in your town and as a league. You have to hold on to certain traditions. You can create new ones, but don't mess with certain things that are the foundation of what your club is. I'm like really looking forward to see how the wise men say at the end of the game with the team, tradition carries on to this year. And let's say, you know, hoping that it's not just a last year thing. So, but anyway, that wasn't near here nor there. But regardless, in speaking of the topic of crest change, crest we have right now is really good. Don't change it. Yes, it's a little busy, but it's a soccer crest. Don't become Juventus, because that's what it sounded like it was going.
So at least the logo isn't changing, at least in the immediate future. We do have a new update, though, when it comes in the jersey department. I guess it's not official, so if you don't believe the shoe leather reporting that's been done over at massivereport.com, then maybe you don't know, and we don't have, no one knows what the new jersey will look like. But I personally do believe our intrepid reporters, and they got a leak, or at least came across a leak, maybe on Twitter's, I'm not sure about the exact origin of it, of what is strongly believed to be the new black road away jersey. I still don't even know. It doesn't ever really quite make sense, especially with, you know, crew where black and yellow, they're two colors. It seems like whatever the newest jersey, that's the first kit that year, and then the other one is the second kit. But regardless, new jersey, it's a little bit difficult to describe. It's black. It's got diagonal yellow and black stripes on the shoulders, reminiscent of the 94 World Cup U.S. team, I believe, right?
Good analogy there, bro. Well done.
But all the MLS teams are wearing at least sort of similar template jerseys. And then the front of it, and credit to whoever it was that did kind of do the breakdown on Massive Report, drawing the analogy to the Russia World Cup jerseys, which I think is pretty good with the sort of, it's not quite checker because it's not even, but it's a sort of, it's like if you hand drew a whole bunch of tic-tac-toe boards on the jersey with like a crayon.
It's like bedazzled almost, yeah, or something.
Anyway, head to MassiveReport.com to take a look at it. Pat and Mike, I guess my first reaction to it is that there's no big sponsor, no Acura across the chest. And are we to infer that, you know, at this, we're less than a month now from opening day of the new season, and do we know, does Crew have a jersey sponsor for 2020?
They're supposed to. Jacob Myers from the Dispatch has reported on this a couple times, and it's believed that everything is moving in that direction. I don't know a ton more than that. So, it seems like every time that they have a new sponsor, it's come down to the wire. I do think with that jersey that you described so eloquently there, Bart, I do think it'll look better once you have a sponsor on the front and you get the names on the back, because the back looks very plain right now, name and number on the back. But yeah, I think, you know, they hired Bez, they hired Steve Lyons, who was part of the Columbus partnership, to help get these deals kind of across the line in some capacity. So I trust that they'll have something done sponsorship wise. But as for the jersey, you know, to me, I wasn't overly excited about it. A guy who's always thought that this team should wear yellow, the black jersey is just, you know, fine for me. But, you know, to me, it's, you know, it's similar to other jerseys the Crew have worn, various forms of black. You know, it's hard to do a ton with that. I was fine with it. The stuff on the front, I think you won't notice as much, like I said, once they have the sponsor on it and whatnot. It was a little weird at first, but the more I've seen it, the more it just kind of, you know, blends in with the rest of the jersey to me at this point.
To me, it looks more like a training kit. Just from what, you know, without the sponsor logo and without the name and stuff. It looks like something they should wear at training or pregame. It's not as beautiful as, like, what Bart's wearing right now, where it has, like, the yellow and white stripes, oh, yeah, which is awesome. Or, like, the, what was it? Was that 98 or 2000? The jersey we found with the... My favorite personal jersey was the one where they had yellow vertical stripes or, like, blocks. They weren't even really stripes. Yeah. They were, like, blocks of yellow. So, me personally, I'm not a huge fan of whatever these are, but maybe once the sponsorship and the names get on there, it'll feel more like a... an actual game kit, but for now I'm holding my reservation.
Real quick,
yeah.
Two topics that we've discussed already tonight, Will Trapp and Pete Edwards. Pete Edwards just tweeted a message to Will Trapp, or to fans about Will Trapp, and I just want to read it real quick, and this literally just happened as we were recording. It says, "It has taken a bit of time to process the fact that Will Trapp will no longer be patrolling our defensive midfield and unlocking our opponent's defenses with a critical first pass. I have known Will for over 10 years, and even as a teenager, his professionalism and leadership abilities were evident. I am honored to have cared for him and to have watched him play for our club. He exemplifies what I hope our best academy players aspire to be. Best of luck always, except against us. Thank you, Will." So... just, I think he really touched on a lot of what we touched on about what Will meant to this team, and that's a guy who knew him rather intimately. We talked about the concussions, helped him work through that, and you know, obviously he waited several days to put that out. So losing Will was not an easy thing, I don't think, for this club.
No, certainly wasn't. And again, I think that's really exemplary of what. Why this ownership is so terrific, and you can't imagine. Certainly, Anthony Precourt would have managed to, you know, get a statement out, but not anything nearly as heartfelt or genuine.
It would have been very copy and paste generic.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you, Will.
It actually has, thank you, insert player name here, and he forgot to replace that with Will. Or he spelled Will, W-I-L-L, or something like that. But, you know, fortunately, we don't have to deal with him for at least one more year. We do have a couple expansion teams that we will have to deal with this year. Nashville and, again, Miami's Inter Miami United FC. What was the old Miami?
Fusion.
The Fusion, yes. Oh, got to bring
cool
it back.
It'd be cool if the whole league wore throwbacks for the 25th anniversary.
Yeah, but instead we'll just make every team like if they had a jersey 25 years ago.
Well, and you know what we didn't talk about is that not only, that would be cool to get retro jerseys, but also...
Well, they're making them for fans. Why? I mean, the only thing I can think of is the league used to be you could have whatever company you want. So, like, Chicago wore Puma and some teams wore Nike.
I guess.
So maybe that would complicate things.
Kappa.
There were some Kappa. But,
ooh, I miss
you know, like, me why... Too. If you're going to have these jerseys be made for fans to buy, why not wear them for a couple games?
Yes.
And it doesn't have to be every team.
Some of the coolest jerseys were from previous years that the league's ever seen.
The really baggy jerseys from, like, the 94
98.
I'd really like the Tampa Bay and Colorado jerseys that were, like, skin tight.
In 2000?
Like Puma style. Which one? Oh, yeah.
We're just enjoying going through some of the old crew jerseys
the best.
Now, as you, dear listener, can enjoy
way,
with us.
This Rapids jersey, I'm pretty sure that's Kappa, isn't it? This Rapids jersey right here?
Yeah, you know what just dawned on me, though? Which is why I got on the mic to start with, is that teams are going to be allowed to have sleeve sponsors, too. And I'm just looking at, if you go back to that white...
I wonder if they'll do
Snickers.
Okay. But what about below the number sponsors, like Snickers and Pepsi back in the day?
Right? Well, yeah, who knows?
I wonder if they'll do Bumble like the Los Angeles Clippers, the dating app.
No, are they?
That's a real,
oh, yeah.
That's a real thing.
Or
something else is, too.
Wish, like the Lakers.
Yep.
I mean, at least Goodyear for Cleveland makes total sense, but...
The jerseys are going to be like NASCAR here in a minute.
Like Mexican
soccer. I was going to say, Mexican League.
Yeah. Oh.
You're right. We should get Tecate. speaking of things from the Mexican League, Lucas Zelaya.
This guy's good.
There we go. But the first of a number, the most prominent of a number of crew off-season additions, a new number 10, a record-breaking transfer sum for crew, $7 million sent to Tigres to bring him in to kind of replace Federico Higuain. Zelaya, 27 years old. So,
yeah.
You know, in his prime, a guy who's, when you watch the YouTube highlights, obviously you can see how talented he is, but wasn't, you know, quite getting starting minutes or at least a prominent spot in the 11 every week for Tigres, it seemed like. But coming to MLS, Mike, Pat, Sam, what's the scouting report on Lucas already? And then we'll go through some of the other, you know, additions. But this obviously the biggest one, the biggest probably at least certainly when it comes to money. But it's safe to say he's the biggest transfer signing that Cruz ever made.
Yeah, I mean, this is obviously the Higuain replacement. I mean, that's certainly a big void that the team had last year. And look, Tigres is an upper echelon Liga MX club. And yeah, you're right. He's hitting. I mean, we're legitimately at the start of the prime of his career, and you know he has a great demeanor about him. And you know the thing about him is he's a guy that looks to be able to facilitate and score, and that's what you want in that role. Because sometimes if you're really feeling it and you can hit a banger from 20 out, great. Or maybe you're feeling it, hey, I can dish it off. You need a guy like that, right? And we saw that with Higuain over the years. So I think this is a huge – everybody knows this is a huge signing. But I think the biggest thing is it takes some of the burden off some of the guys that were putting a lot of pressure on themselves last year, like a Zardes who struggled in phases, like a Santos who is playing a role that really isn't in his wheelhouse, right? So I think you're going to see him bring the best out of the players that we already know are accomplished. And then, you know, somebody like Luis Diaz, you know, now he's got a guy feeding him the ball that's his job. So I think this is not only huge from a financial standpoint, and it's great that the Haslams are opening up their checkbook, but on the field, this is going to reap rewards.
before I get into this, I want to criticize Alex Stanek for not being here but being on Twitter tweeting about politics. That's just a low blow to us.
Yeah, really, Stanek.
I think the question mark with Zell Ryan, is that what we've decided?
I think Zella Ryan.
Yeah. Okay.
Is what we're going with.
There's no audible pronunciation on the Crew's website yet, and preseason, despite being 3 weeks in, has not allowed us to talk to anyone yet. So, haven't gotten confirmation on that. But I think the big question mark is you look at what he's done previously, and it's not a prolific number of goals or assists. 139 appearances for Tigres across all competitions. 23 goals, 14 assists. And, you know, I know some people are worried about that. He hasn't always played the number 10 role. You know, how will that adjustment be? But you go back and you look at what Higuain did before he came here. You know, when he was at Cologne, 62 appearances, 10 goals. Goody Cruz, 36 appearances, 11 goals. So, you know, not the most prolific goal scorer. And also a setup man either at other clubs, came here and was obviously phenomenal. So not saying that that's necessarily how it's going to work, but you bring in another Argentinian, a guy that, you know, this coaching staff scouted extensively, I know, and are very excited about. So I think we have to trust that you know, he'll fit into the role. I think it's good that they got him in here early so he could have a full preseason with the club, get to know his teammates, get to know the guys you mentioned, the attackers around him. You know, that's vital for a number 10, a setup guy, to be familiar with how guys make runs, where they like the ball served, that type of thing. And what I'll be interested in, Mike and I were talking about this before the podcast, does he play in that true number 10 role, like an Higuain, like a Scalotto, or is he more like how Caleb Porter used Diego Valeri in Portland as almost a second forward, you know, a guy that certainly drops into the midfield, but is also, you know, kind of playing underneath Giassi Zardes and you know, expected to finish some more of those chances. Higuain obviously scored his fair share of goals, so did Scalotto, but that wasn't his main job.
I mean, you're talking about the prolific. I mean, if you look at Valeri's stat line, he was solid in Argentina, but he wasn't at that level of, you know, that we saw in MLS. I mean, he was an MVP, what, in 18, 17, 18, something like that? And so, to me, I think you discount those things, and I mean, you can use that as a foundation. But in the end, as you mentioned, these guys, it's a different ball game down there too, right? Also, a lot of Central and South American soccer leagues don't really tabulate assists the way we do here in MLS. So, you know, that was one of the big things with Valeri and Higuain. I mean, I think if my memory serves right, they're both number one in terms of assists for their clubs. And so perhaps over 5, 6, 7, 8 years, we'll see that with Lucas as well. So you can use previous stat lines to a degree, but to act like that's the end all be all, I think that would be that would serve this club and him. It'd be an underutilized facet of his game that way.
And I, oh, go ahead, Sam.
I was just going to say, it's the first time we get a playmaker that's under 33, right?
Well, no, Higuain was 28.
Yeah.
Was he really?
Yeah, he was younger.
Maybe he just always looked older.
Yeah,
so, okay. Yeah, well, he did. Okay, yeah. Younger, he sure did.
Yeah, so this is our youngest playmaker. So there.
He's 27, but he looks all at 24.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
But he does, yeah, he does look, Patrick Gul'dan and I were at the airport when he came in, and yeah, he looks like 21, 22.
He's also taller than both Higuain and Scalotto.
He is taller, but he is also like not as stocky. Like he's kind of thinner.
Thin framed, yeah.
But I got to say, the only comment I have about Zella Ryan or whatever, however we're calling him, is that while his English was really bad, he uttered one sentence that immediately poked directly to the hearts of Crew fans. And it was, I choose Columbus. So that's probably going to be a chant in here somewhere,
sure.
You know, in the 2020 season.
Well, and one thing I think with bringing in a player like this is, yes, maybe he hasn't had to be the number 10, but and kind of transitioning us to another new player, the Crew haven't had a guy like Darlington Nagbe in the midfield in I don't know how long, you know. Robert Varzija might have been the last guy that could do some of the passes that Darlington Nagbe consistently makes.
Brian Carroll.
No. Yeah, but Brian Carroll sat more. He was more of a true holding midfielder. Carroll could play a ball, don't get me wrong. But anyway, my point is that, you know, Nagby could even take on a little bit of that number 10 creative role.
Absolutely.
And allow Zellerin to float, maybe, to, you know, if he likes to move out wide, if he likes to sit under Zardes. You know, Nagby, I think, is going to be this kind of addition that, you know, kind of went under the radar. I feel like just it happened early in the off season, and
well, and there'd been discussion for more than a year.
Yeah, and so I think people will be very happy with what Nagby brings, and I think it can help that attacking quartet, including Zellerin, of you know, just getting in the right positions and maybe not necessarily registering a ton of assists, because over Nagby's career, correct me if I'm wrong, Mike, but I don't think he has a ton.
No.
But he does set plays up and, you know, maybe get that hockey assist that MLS seems to only give to players that play for the Galaxy, or, you know, the play right before that kind of gets the play going or builds you out of the back.
Well, you know, there's a really good article in Massive Report about Darlington Nagby. I would highly recommend people give it a read.
That was by this mic, not the other mic.
But look, here's the thing. Yes, if you look at his stat line, this is one of the things that is mentioned in the article, is that he doesn't score a ton of goals. He doesn't have more than a handful of assists every year. But what he brings to the table is one of those things that doesn't necessarily show up on the stat line. And is that he makes defenders have to make the decisions they don't want to make. And he's beautiful on the ball 1v1. He gets a ton of fouls and dangerous spots, penalty kick opportunities as well. So, and again, he wanders all over the field, which is what you want in that kind of box-to-box midfield role. And in this system, he's going to flourish.
I think so. And I think, you know, you've got now that you didn't quite have with Will and Artur, you know, that traditional 8 and 6 in the center midfield positions. You know, Artur, who's not going to be asked, and Darlington, who's going to be looked to be box-to-box and that scoring threat. And yes, he only had 2 goals last season, but that is exactly as many as Will Trapp and Artur have in their careers. And I know Will Trapp and both he and Artur bring lots of different elements to their game and excel in that, but Crew have had all of 4 different players over the past 2 years that have scored 3 goals or more in a season. Giassi Zardes is one of them. He's done it twice. Pedro Santos did it once last year. And then it was Federico Higuain. And who's the fourth one?
In the last
Sorrow?
Nico Hansen.
What?
With 3 goals 2 years ago.
Yeah. Wow.
That's this team has relied so heavily on the 10 and the 9 getting all the goals. You had Pedro and Giassi that scored, you know, 2/3 of the goals for this team last year. And I think that if Darlington Nagby or another guy that we'll talk about a little bit later, Fernando Adi, who have scored in MLS, forget the 2015 MLS Cup that didn't happen. These are guys who are proven MLS scorers, and they don't need to be the you know, 5-goal scorers that Darlington Nagby was in his prime, or, you know, the 10-goal scorer that Adi was back in the day, but just somebody that can add some goals outside of just those 2 players being so reliant.
Sorry, Bart, I'm going to need you to repeat all that. Super Bowl's replaying and Shakira's on the screen during the halftime show, so I missed it all. I'm sorry. She was doing that weird tongue thing.
I just want to say, what was it, 20... I think it was 2012 maybe or 2013 mm-hmm. when halfway through the season, Josh Williams was the leading scorer for the team by like 4 goals.
Josh Williams, who at one point in his career couldn't buy a goal.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Josh Williams was scoring like in droves.
Yeah.
Well, heck, even last year, Sorrow.
Yeah. But Sorrow had like scored those 2 early goals, and that was about it.
Well, it was exactly. Was no one else scored more than No one scored more than 2 goals, but yeah. Sanj and Giassi last year.
Look, guys, last year we were in the bottom 5, I think, in goals 4. This is going to be a different story this year. And I,
you
I,
heard it here.
Yeah, I'll bet the farm that that's going to be the case. So
you have a farm?
I have a couple farms.
Why don't we record the podcast at the farm?
Because we wouldn't have Shakira playing. We wouldn't have the beer taps. I'm
good
sorry.
Point.
But, you know, with guys like Nagby, and you mentioned Adi, and I know Stanek is waving his anti-Adi flag for some reason, just because he wore a Timber jersey, I'm assuming.
Hey, do you want to clarify the Adi situation that we talked about earlier? Because I don't think most everybody caught that.
Sure. I think so. If you didn't pay attention on a Friday night a couple weeks ago, the Crew claimed Adi off waivers after Cincinnati waived him after what was an utterly disappointing season last year. That means at this point in the waiver process, the Crew put in a bid for how much they were willing to pay Adi. That would count against the salary cap. And it's been reported by, I believe it was Paul Tenorio of The Athletic or Sam Stachel of The Athletic, one of The Athletic guys that do a great job, that number for the Crew, which will be the cap hit, was $200,000, which means that FC Cincinnati will have to pay the remainder, reportedly $1.98 million.
See, that for that reason alone, it's worth it.
Yeah, exactly. And then, see, that's the thing I'm saying.
Well, and you also force Cincinnati to use their one-time buyout that you can
right.
do once per season. So they bought.
It just gets better and better. It's the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah, they bought Adi out, but they still have to pay him. It just won't count against their cap.
Exactly. They have to pay him and get no benefits from it.
Right. So the Crew are going to pay him $200,000. This is a guy who was making top five, I believe, striker money in the league. Now, you can argue whether he earned it over the last couple of years, but is still only 29 years old, has worked under Caleb Porter before. You know, if there is a risk here, it's that he doesn't fit with the locker room, doesn't accept being the number two striker.
Potentially.
Yeah. I mean, like, this is like worst case scenario,
right.
is that it becomes a locker room issue. The best case scenario is that you now have two proven MLS goal scorers in Giassi Zardes and Fernando Adi. You know Giassi Zardes is going to miss time with the national team throughout the course of the season. And you have a guy who's in a similar mold, not exactly the same, but a target striker type of player. And, you know, I think that the risk of him being a problem under a guy that, by all reports, he was not much of a problem, and Caleb Porter knows how to kind of manage him. And Adi needs, you know, this is a chance for Adi to kind of prove that the last 2 years were a fluke, and do so by not being, you know, frankly a jerk in the locker room. So, you know, I think it was a smart move by the Crew to bid low, and, you know, get a guy who could potentially score you. You know, even if he's coming off the bench 5-6 goals, as Bart pointed out, that doesn't happen very often. And, you know, hopefully help some of the younger guys coming along. I think, you know, Jordan Hamilton's a guy who's shown some things in MLS, but maybe not quite ready. And J.J. Williams is a guy who I think is still in the development stages of his professional career. So, you know, there is a little bit of risk, but you're not paying a ton. And you could get a decent, if not more than decent, reward.
This is the best backup striker Crew have had since Ola Kamara.
Yeah, I mean, this may be the best backup striker if things work the way they want that the Crew have had ever. I mean, you know, Ola Kamara, Jeff Cunningham. The list is short in terms
Sneaky
of backup.
Pete Marino.
Okay, Edson Buttle.
Well, look, here's the thing about Adi, and I wish to God Stanek was here because I got to hear what he has to say about this.
Tune in next week.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, look, you're talking about a guy, again, 29 years old, has scored either 3 or 4 seasons worth of double-digit goals in this league, okay, while splitting time with Maximum Urruti in Portland. All right? And I understand. The Timbers beat Columbus in 2015. I know people want to act like that didn't happen, but it did. This isn't Portland Timbers 2.0. But the reality is, you
not
get,
yet.
Yeah. You get guys that are proven. And if that's your backup, yep. What could people possibly complain about? Mm-hmm. Your backup's a guy who started in an MLS Cup, a guy who scored double-digit goals multiple seasons, okay? Who played under Porter and understands the system. And again, we saw last year when Zardes went through phases where he couldn't buy a goal. He couldn't hit an open goal. He was hitting the posts. Why not have a guy like that that could go, hey, Zardes needs to take a break for a minute. Let's bring a guy like this in who could score goals. And again, when you tie in all the Cincinnati stuff, it's hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
This
yeah.
is a win-win.
If we just get, like, if he just scores, you know, he I guarantee will score one in Hell's Real. If he plays, 100%. If he comes on, he's absolutely scoring. And yes. that by itself will pay for it.
Right. As far as I was thinking the same thing. If he scores one goal
yep.
all year, it will be against Cincinnati. Absolutely. I assure you that so much.
That will be
so fans, be happy about this move.
Yeah, I agree with that. We got a couple other. There's one that was sort of, you know, under the radar. It happened actually last year, and then he had to play out, you know, the season. And I know there's been a little bit of weird stuff. Fans of Oxford, the team he was loaned at, we're talking about Chris Caden or Cadden, sorry, because there's Aiden Moores and Chris Cadden. Anyway, quick scouting report on Cadden. What does he bring to the team? At least looked like he can play at the right back, but could also maybe play at that center mid position in a pinch. What does he bring to the squad?
So think of like a younger version of like a Hector Jimenez, kind of like mm-hmm. a jack of all trades kind of guy, right? And the stuff with Oxford United, if people aren't familiar, essentially what happened there is when he left his youth club, Motherwell, there in Scotland, that's who he came up with, played with them since he was, I think, 8 or 9 years old, and then got immediately loaned. The reason why he was loaned last year wasn't because the Crew didn't feel like he could be helpful. The Crew needed an international roster spot that they did not have. And so they were unable to bring him over. So they put him on loan, and then there were some fans of Motherwell who were ticked off that Motherwell didn't get any compensation. They didn't get any compensation fee because he came over on a free transfer from us but was loaned to Oxford United. Okay, but he's a guy who plays mostly right back or outside back. He can play some outside mid, and in a pinch, again, some center mid. So we're talking about how we're thin at the center midfield. In a pinch, a guy like him could play there. He's young. A cool thing that I came across was that one of the things he looked at in MLS, he saw the Hell is Real in Cincinnati. Crew versus Cincinnati, said, I want to be a part of that. And so he's dying to play in a game like that and to play in front of 35,000 people in a game like that. So, and he's only 23 years old, and he comes really cheap. And he's you in this league in particular, you cannot have too many guys that are utility players, guys that can fill in a pinch. And he's that through and through. So Crew Finch, that's an underrated play in terms of a roster move. But he's a guy I think who's going to make some things happen for us to a small degree.
I agree. I think he was brought in as the potential successor to Harrison Offal. He's a guy who can get up and down the wing, similarly to Harrison. I don't know if anyone does it like Harrison does with that kind of reckless abandon, but you get the point. Who knows how long Harrison Offal's legs are going to allow him to make those type of consistent runs. But you want some depth there. And obviously last year when Offal was out, Hector Jimenez was able to slide in, but then they needed depth at left back. So this now provides you with two options on either side of at the fullback spots in Harrison Offal and Chris Cadden on one side and Milton Valenzuela and Waylon Francis on the other. And then Hector Jimenez can fill in at either spot. And then, as you mentioned, Hector and Cadden can both play in the midfield if needed. So this is a guy that I think they're not 100% sure that this is a surefire MLS starter, but he's a young guy that can develop here, play underneath Harrison for a couple of years or however long Harrison remains with the club, and potentially be that successor. And if not, as Mike mentioned, he's a cheap option. He's a guy that, I think, as you said, is excited to be here. And if it doesn't work out, then, you find another right back down the road. But I think it's a good move for the Crew. I'm excited to see him. I haven't seen a ton of him, to be honest with you. I'll be very interested to see, once we're hopefully able to watch some of the preseason, what he looks like, in terms of his style at that position. But, You know, you want options that can serve balls, that can get up and down the wings, and he gives you another option at that position.
You know, and he had a cup of coffee with Scotland. He's had a couple of caps with them. And, you know, you're talking about the outside back role. Well, guess what? We, more or less, Caleb Porter has a new acquisition in Milton.
Right.
I mean, he didn't have him last year. And something Pat and I talked about earlier was that I don't think people understand in terms of a scheme.
We forget how good he was.
Yeah,
my
he's
God,
good.
As
he's
a 19-year-old kid, now 21.
Yeah, I mean, he can get up and down the field, but here's the biggest thing. In this system, outside backs have to be able to bomb up and down the field. Well, we saw how we couldn't score, the crew could not score last year. Well, that a big chunk of that is because we didn't have enough.
There's an awful injured long
right.
time and no Milton.
Right. So, you know, they're playing their fifth outside back at one point. Josh Williams was outside back at one point, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, you get a guy like that, that's almost like bringing on a brand new player for the system. Mm-hmm. So that's – I think that's going to lend itself to not only defensively but certainly offensively being able to open up our the Crew's game a little bit, and that's what you want. That's where we struggled last year.
And, you know, speaking of Josh Williams and playing outside back – that might be, you know, his best chance for getting some minutes, as much as I love Josh Williams, because of the moves Crews made at the center back position. Adding Vito Wormhoor and Axel Søberg. I mean, suddenly you look at the depth that this team has at center back with, you know, Vito, who's a guy who's played and captained a team in Norway. You know, probably someone, frankly, that Greg Berhalter had a lot of familiarity with. And then Søberg, who I believe has been, you know, a couple years removed from being an MLS Best 11. You know, you kind of more or less did a trade with Colorado for Lawless, Abubakar, and Søberg. And, you know, you trade Lawless, a young guy, but, you know, maybe he was 6'1 if you stretched out those braids long enough all the way to the top. But Axel Søberg is every bit of 6'7 or whatever it is, you know, enormous. Suddenly this is a very big center back crew. You add in, you know, a young guy like Buba Keita in there, Josh Williams. There's going to be a lot of competition for that spot next. I think it's pretty safe to say that Jonathan Mensah has one of those spots, you know, solidified, but there's going to be a lot of competition for that. And center back, once again, now I don't think it's, you know, at the expense of other positions as it almost was last year. Our depth at center back was so good, and everywhere else it was a little bit rough, but now at center back, I mean, this is as strong a group as Crew has had.
Look, the spine of the team is what any coach will tell you, and Porter talks about it all the time. Well, that's what the Crew have focused on this offseason, you know. And don't overlook a move like Axel Søberg, because 2016 Best 11, he is gigantic. He's kind of a lummox in the sense that he's not particularly fast. Mm-hmm. I remember when he was drafted by – I lived in Colorado when he was drafted by the Rapids, and they drafted him and a guy named Joseph Greenspan, who was 6'6". I'm like, are they building a basketball team or are they building a soccer team there? But, you know, you're talking about a guy who can play, is really good in the air. And he's a little slow-footed, but if you play him with a Mensah, you don't have to worry about it because Mensah's got a lot of pace. If you play him with Akita, he's great. He's going to pick up that pace too. So last year we saw where our lack of depth really showed how a team can struggle. Okay, so if Mensah goes down, if Vito goes down, whatever it might be, you have a guy who was just 3 years ago a Best 11 player. That's not a bad thing. That's not something you overlook. So I think it's a great an undervalued move in him. So, you know, spine of the team. We talked about Lucas. Now you have Vito. You have Nagby. I mean, the spine of the team is so much better now than what it was just 6 months ago.
And I think it'll be interesting to see, you mentioned the depth at center back, how Caleb Porter uses that, because he's talked about it before. Ideally, he wants two starting center backs that he goes to, and I think most coaches would, week in and week out. Now, obviously, you'll have rotation when you have 3 games in 8 days, or you have Open Cup games. Inevitably, there'll be somebody who picks up a knock and has to miss some time or whatnot. But, you know, ideally, he wants two starting center backs. And we assume, and I think preseason's kind of shown us, that that'll be Jonathan Mensah and Vito Wormgore. But... you know, you still want to get a guy like Abubakar Keita minutes. You know, you didn't bring Axel Søberg here to just ride the pine entirely. You mentioned Josh Williams earlier. You know, he's a guy who deserves, just because of his time with the team, to find minutes. So I'll be very interested to see how they do this. It would be nice, you know, if you have those two starters you can go to, especially in the big games. But, you know, there will be a little bit of rotation. You know, Jonathan Mensah's played a lot of minutes for this club.
Yeah.
You know, I know.
Is Cup of Nations, when's that? I feel like that's an odd amount of years, too. And I feel like it's every other year, it seems like. And it's like you could be losing him for, I guess, Cup of Nations, it kind of falls at, you know, different times. But.
Well, I mean,
it's every 2 years. It used to be in January, and now it's in the summer.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
But
so
it is this year.
No, 2021, I believe. Well, I thought it was in odd years.
According to Wikipedia, it's in Cameroon this summer.
Yeah.
All right.
And in 2021, for some reason.
Yeah, see, it's usually every other year, and it was on odd years.
I don't know.
Well, I mean, look, regardless, I mean, whether it's international calls, whether it's injuries, whether it's because the Crew are playing so many games in so few days, the depth is there. And that's ultimately what you want. We saw how a team can struggle without depth last year. So those things have been, theoretically anyway, and on paper, those things have been fixed.
Absolutely. And there's a lot. And I think, you can't. And the other thing is you could do worse than, you know, potentially, okay, if things are going well, you can always loan out a Bubakeda and give him, you know, minutes for a USL side. I mean, one of the other things that's sort of been buried with all the deluge of Crew news is that they are looking to field a reserve team. I don't think that wouldn't be until 2021, so maybe that's a moot point for this specific conversation. But that's also something, you know, that we touched on with Tim Bezbachenko last year when we spoke with him. And, you know, I think, Mike, you were the one that brought up the question. And, you know, he was a little bit he mentioned that was something that, you know, they've been looking at, but now it looks like it will be a reality come 21.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, all the talk says that they'll be playing at Mapfre Stadium, and, you know, once the Crew move into the new downtown stadium. So it's great because now they'll be in-house, essentially, and they have control of the players and what kind of minutes they may or may not get. So that's ultimately what you want with the reserve team.
Yeah, I think that's great. You know, the big issue with that has always been the expense of, you know, you have to field this whole other team. That means paying players. You know, you can use academy players and some of the guys on the first team that aren't seeing regular minutes, but to have a whole team, you're going to have some guys that are strictly Crew 2 or, you know, whatever they decide to call it, players. So you got to pay them. You got to have a place to play, all that stuff. And now that kind of infrastructure is in place. And, you know, that's only positive for the Crew. They will be able to, you know, have the control, as you mentioned, of guys instead of, you know, like Elias Abubakar last year, sending him to Colorado, or guys, J.J. Williams last year went to Birmingham and places where, you know, you hope they get minutes, but you don't have any control over it. You don't have any control over the style of play, anything like that. So this will be a big move for the Crew, assuming everything pans out the way it's been reported and they end up with that second division team in one of the USL leagues.
It'll certainly be interesting. We do have some other kind of late breaking news here as we're about to close. So one of the nice things about being a de facto leader of a supporters group is that when no one else that's officially in the supporters group is here, you can just kind of act unilaterally as a despot. And so I am now proud to announce here, breaking on the Massive Report, that the Greater Columbus Golden Boys and Girls Lifestyle Brand / Supporters Group is proud to be an official 2020 sponsor of the Massive Report podcast. Sam, the check is in the mail. But
I will insert the applause in post.
But the Greater Columbus Golden Boys and Girls Supporters Group / Lifestyle Brand, you can follow us at GCGBag on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.
One of the best memes. One of the best Crew Twitters just available.
It is really good.
It's rather good.
It's really good.
And I say that with no connection to it at all. Aside from
nor do I, really. No. But make sure to follow us on GCG at GCGBag96 on Twitter and Facebook, just GCGBag on Instagram. The Greater Columbus Golden Boys and Girls, Champions of Mega Tailgate, definitely not failing, and official 2020 sponsors of the Massive Report podcast. It's a thing. We also want to thank our primary sponsor, 180 Property Development. Head to 180propertydevelopment.com. If you've got a development need, if you want to build something together with 180 Property Development, again, that's the number 180propertydevelopment.com. Terrific sponsors and patrons of the Massive Report. I also want to thank our spot here for this week, the Point Tavern. It's been a nice one, guys. It's a good spot.
It's no fun. Farm that Mike owns, but you know, it's exactly. Been very good.
Yes, Mike will be once he bets at the farm. By the way, guys, crew plus 4,000. I'm not really good at betting, but like I think that's a good odds for the crew in winning MLS Cup. That's good money if you just throw a little bit on there.
That's true.
So you know, if you're a betting person, not that we support that, or I don't know if we're allowed to support it now that sports betting is mostly legal. Maybe that's going to be a new feature on the Massive Report. By the way, Massive Report looking for new writers. If you're interested, reach out, Sam.
Well, writers and sponsors, if you would be like to would you be interested in being like GCG Bag and sponsor a segment or an additional broke the mic. See, this is why we need sponsors.
this is what you want to sponsor, folks.
Reach out. Please reach out to massivereport@gmail.com and one of our editors will kindly respond to you.
Absolutely. And we'll be back next week, and we'll have lots of picks, preseason picks, the like. Brian Phillips will hopefully be back with us. Alex Stanek, Ralph Shudell will hopefully have recovered from injuries and recovered a phone, respectively. But for our panel here, for Mike, for Pat, for Sam, guys, it's been a pleasure. It's been too long, and I'm glad that we're back to talk about the Columbus Crew.
It's nice to have the band back together.
Oh, it's good to be back.
Also, one last thing. Once we get things figured out with our primary sponsor, we will, again, in the year 2020, be giving away 2 tickets to every single home game of the Columbus Crew season.
That's right. That's why you need to keep and continue listening to the Massive Report. Subscribe, like us, give us 5-star ratings, send comments to @Pat_Murphy on Twitter, right, if you've got complaints. But only nice comments if you subscribe on iTunes. Only say nice things about me. I'm very insecure. But otherwise, fellas, it's been a pleasure. Thank you guys, all our listeners. We're glad to have you back. And for Pat, for Mike, for Sam, it's Bart. Bye, buddies.